I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who could do that too, if they had those tools. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right. What's going on, everybody? It's show number 512. On today's show, we're talking about extra screws, how Minwax stain works, and design intellectual property. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a new product each month to one lucky Wood Talk listener. This month, they're giving away a Clampit Deluxe Kit, which includes everything you need for perfect 90-degree joints on large and small projects. I've actually used these in the past. These are fantastic for casework, holding up those big pieces of ply, keeping them together. Pretty great. The prize is valued at $89.99. Enter for your chance to win before November 1st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
I'm going to win some stuff. It'd be nice.
No, you're not eligible.
Oh, well, that's fine. I guess. I mean, sure.
You're eligible by them.
I feel like right now, like with music vibing, like I just listened to Shannon's Tonewood episode.
Yeah.
I think Shannon needs to like do some like follow-up things like he did in the show.
Sure.
Because I was sitting there, I was driving around, I'm like, wait a second. Shannon is like hitting some sweet notes right now.
That's what he does.
Yeah, I'll play with formant frequencies in the next episode. It'll be fun.
And if you want to help support this show, not Shannon's show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and sign up to become a patron of this show. This time, we're thanking Nathan Lawrence, John Hankins, Brendan H., the one and only Barry, and Timothy Tarvin.
All right.
The one and only Barry.
It's good stuff.
The magnificent Barry.
The one and only Barry.
He's opening, opening in the Atlantic City Sands all week, I hear. Right. The one and only Barry. That's actually a great name for your magician.
It would be. The amazing
you one and only Barry. You have very low expectations when you go in, and he just blow you away.
Right.
That's the trick, you know? You start with low expectations, and it's all uphill from this.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of the secret to success of this show.
Oh, yes.
Set those expectations low and just hope for the best from there. It can only go uphill.
Well, I'm here again, so, you know.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to what's on the bench. What's on my bench is actually a bench, which is kind of funny. So building a new bench, and it's almost done. Applying some finish, and we'll be reassembling everything, getting it back together. Got some cheapo vices on there, which was definitely a change of pace, but I'm going to give it the old college try and see how I enjoy these vices. I mean, after rolling with Benchcrafted for like 10 years, it's a bit of an adjustment to go back to like, you know, the stick in the hole thing. You know what I'm talking about?
The stick in the hole thing. Yeah.
Classic handles. I've got one quick release in the tail vise position, and I have a standard face vise in the front. And you know, it's just not that bad. I mean, so far what I've been doing, playing around with it, you know, it's the funny thing was I was like, oh, I'm going to have a trouble adjusting to quick release vices. And then, John, my assistant goes, you realize the Benchcrafted stuff isn't quick release either. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, sort of, I mean like the tail vise, I'll give you that, right? Or their shoulder vise. That is fairly slow and you are turning that crank for a while, but the leg vise, the way that thing is tuned, you just give it one good push like the big wheel on The Price is Right, and that thing just goes until it hits home. So it is kind of a quick release,
it doesn't make
even though
cool
it's technically
sound.
Not.
Beep, 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 beep.
That's true.
Beep, 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 beep.
Right?
It needs to do that.
It would be a great sound effect for the ad, honestly. A good upgrade.
Seriously. Oh my God, that is so annoying.
Yeah. Every time. It'd be great.
What would be more annoying is the reams of Instagram posts of people, you know, because we already get the people who install it and give it the spin and watch it glide into place. Now,
the final
test. That'll be the sound effect.
Yeah, I don't know. I might enjoy that. The other thing I've been doing is using a lot of Rockler's specific products that just work well for a workbench. They have bench bolts. So with the cross dowels or barrel nuts or whatever the heck you want to call those things, big old hardware for knockdown construction, which has been really handy. And then also their workbench casters are great. And not just the workbench casters. One of the problems with those casters is that they protrude from whatever you attach them to, which means potentially they could become a trip hazard. So Rockler actually has these brackets that you can attach to the bench and then slide the caster in, put a little safety pin in there, and it's ready to go. So if it's something that you're not actually using very often, which is definitely going to be my case, these little brackets are fantastic. So you could just kind of put the casters away in a drawer somewhere. Whenever you need them, slide them in place, pop them down, and now you're mobile again.
Oh, that's without slick. Yeah.
Any trip.
They're not even there.
Yeah. I mean, you just have a black bracket there, which is not ideal, but if you have this need for mobility at all, I mean, I usually put mine up on like furniture dollies, prop it up. And then that's actually where my old bench is right now, sitting on two furniture dollies on the other side. Yeah. So it is. So, you know, putting your foot down on these little handles and propping them up on the workbench casters is a much better way to go. And especially for people who have to move it frequently. I think it's a really good solution.
Putting a workbench on a furniture dollar just sounds like a young man's game.
This is coming from the guy using like forklifts to lift, you know, sequoias.
Anything. Like, doesn't matter what it is.
Like, seriously.
I just heavy intentionally don't move anything anymore.
Yeah, well, too heavy, though, is not part of your programming anymore.
That's true.
No.
Like,
no,
nothing
no,
no. is too heavy.
Not anymore, no.
Yeah, well, so here's my dilemma now. Is I have two workbenches and a shop that does not facilitate owning two workbenches. And I've got to decide which one to keep. And let me ask, you guys know me pretty well. Which workbench do you think I'm going to keep? If you had to guess.
The old one.
The fancy one.
The old one?
Yeah, the old one.
Yeah.
The old one.
The one with the Wood Whisperer logo on the leg vise. And
yeah, but now I got a Shaper Origin. I could have put a Wood Whisperer logo everywhere.
That's true.
God.
I'm going to put one on the damn wall.
Put it in your table saw.
Inlay it.
But the new bench won't still have the remnants of that stupid brown stain left in the pores.
And, oh, yeah.
I mean, that's true. The experimental brown stain, whatever.
Listen, it wasn't stupid. It was a great idea.
Well, you know, it doesn't work. So that's a plus.
So I don't know. I'm actually kind of undecided, and I am at this point leaning toward the new bench. And the reason why is I've always thought
you
that
feel okay.
I'm getting old.
Doesn't sound like so you at all.
No, the new bench is smaller. It's a little bit more lightweight. I've always felt that the original Rubo is extravagantly large.
Like, yeah, it's awesome.
It is awesome. But I often feel like that's yeah, way more than I've, it's way more than I've ever needed. And in a slightly tighter space, I've got this new workbench there. And I'm like, man, look at this, all this room around this that I can actually do stuff with. And it really reclaimed a decent amount of space. So I'm doing a little soul searching here. But I do have to say there's another part of this. While workbench design is not something that's like, you know, anyone is inventing anything really new here. The Rubo was something I pretty much said, oh, Benchcrafted, you guys have plans? Cool. Can I borrow those? And made a new workbench out of it, right? In this case, I just kind of from the ground up, from everything that I've done in the past, everything I've learned, have designed this new bench to just be mine. And granted, it's just a workbench. There's not that much I can do to make it like, ooh, look at my sweet new design. I invented this thing. But there is a little bit more of a personal thing to it. because I'm the one who picked the numbers. I just decided how big it was, how tall it was, how big the legs were, how everything went together. So there is that like, well, this one's mine now. The other one was Rubo's and Benchcrafted's and Chris Schwarz's. But like, this one's mine. So I don't know. I feel a little more attached to it, and I may keep the new one. And here's the other thing. The new one is cherry, which is going to darken over time, which solves my problem of that darker color that I was going for with that stupid stain. So I'm kind of in favor there's a lot of pluses to this new one. So I don't know.
Well, there is merit to the fact that, I mean, the Rubo bench, it's a hand tool workbench. I mean, I think there were enhancements. I mean, just the split top, I think, lends itself more towards kind of a power tool approach. Or at least I see the power tool or the hybrid woodworkers using the split top model. But I mean, I wouldn't get rid of my Rubo, you know, on a bet because it's designed exactly for the work I do, which is kind of what you're saying about the new bench. You know, the work that you design this based upon the work you do. It just so happens that André Rubo and I are very similar in our work. That was, I'm not sure what that accent was. It went really off the rails.
So, terrible French is what that was.
It was. That's pretty good.
Don't you like my bring up a good point.
Yeah.
Like the sliding dead man. I can count on one hand the number of times I've used that since I built this bench. Yeah.
Mine's off and laying in the corner.
Right. So there are other ways that if and when, and it's not often, but if I need that type of functionality to help clamp something to the front of the bench, I've got other ways to accomplish that. And I can have a nice recessed rail on the bottom because I don't need anything to push up against that. I don't need a sliding dead man to be flush with the front. So it kind of opened up the design options a little bit. And I don't use that feature. You know what I do use? Power. So having integrated power and not just like a stupid power strip, you know, screwed to the leg and like, there it is, there's my integrated power. I've actually found a marine outlet with a rubber like gasket around the outside and a spring loaded little lid on it that I put a outlet into one of the legs. And you just bore it out and run the wire. And it's actually kind of cool because I'm always concerned about things like dust accumulation or spilling something in there. But having this little lid there is pretty damn sweet because it's meant to go like on a boat somewhere. So integrated power.
Did you make the lid from teak?
No, it's all just gray, ugly plastic. Heathen. But it's fine. Maybe I'll make
it. It wants to be on a boat and you have it in some garage somewhere.
That's right. What a life.
You're depriving it of the life it wanted.
Look, I have two dogs that would be happier elsewhere, but I keep them in the house. So it's just the way life is. So anyway, I don't know. I think I am leaning toward the new one, but we will see. And really, the big question is like how to offload the old one if I choose to do that. Obviously, it's going to be some kind of like giveaway.
I'm thinking like Viking funeral.
Yes. Just send it off. Shoot flaming arrows at it. Yes.
I think that's fantastic.
Actually, like no one gets this. We're just going to kill it. That would be hilarious. Au revoir, Rubo. That would be good. Okay.
God, you want to talk about views? That would go through the roof. I mean, come on.
Can you imagine, like, what a waste? It's just a great, perfectly good workbench, and I'm just burning it.
In the middle of a pond. Hardware on.
It just sinks to the bottom. It's never to be seen again. Cremona, great idea, man. Nice.
All ideas, man, you know?
That's why I like you. Anyway, so that's enough about me. Matt, what do you got going on?
I think I'm going to go burn a workbench.
Yeah. Well, I got a new design for you if you're interested.
I'm thinking maybe I'll just dump mine in my burn pile. We'll have a little bonfire.
Roast some marshmallows tonight. Oh my God. Can't wait to see that in your story.
Oh, yeah. You'll see it. You'll hear all about it.
Yeah.
People will tell you
I can see him putting it on the forks of the telehandler, lighting it on fire, and then like raising it up like 20 feet off the ground.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, here is a tribute to the Viking gods.
Yeah. And then just like an epic Game of Thrones music soundtrack and flaming arrows. Man, I could see it all.
Make it happen, man.
In a very common theme here, we're going to remember what? We are getting ready to start on our home edition, ooh, which is going to include a new office for Lindsay and myself. So I won't be like underneath all of the action anymore. Wow. So that's maybe great. We won't have this noise thing.
Good.
But we probably will. I mean, they're kids.
Now you're just going to be in the action. Different noise.
Yeah, no place is safe when you have kids in a house.
Dang it. They don't tell you. These are things they don't tell you.
No. I hope you guys have you're going to put carpet in there or like hardwood floors.
So the office is going to be like a basement thing.
Okay.
So we don't have any like floor finishes spec'd out right now because we're trying to like do things a little slowly. So we'll do like a rug.
Yeah, like an area rug. Okay.
In the office, but the addition is going to be a sunroom, which will be part of the new kitchen.
I'm already confused, but it sounds great.
I know. Well, we're putting a sunroom on the house.
Okay.
Which is going to be attached to where the new kitchen is going to be. And the sunroom will have a full basement underneath it. So the basement under the sunroom will be an office.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that sounds great.
We're getting some of that space going.
Very nice.
Which is gonna be fun.
How much are you doing yourself? I mean, I assume you're getting a crew for this.
My friend Donovan and me. That's are doing the whole thing. Yes.
Okay. That should go well.
Oh, man. So much confidence today.
It's going to go good. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, we'll just see it. We'll be talking about it for like at least 6 months.
Yeah, no, that's going to be awesome, though. Home renovations can be like the most stressful thing in the world, but like the payoff is when you're finally done, you got that new space, everything looks great. That's awesome.
I think it's be interesting for me because I haven't done a whole lot of like construction stuff, and the construction stuff I have done has all been on like new kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's very different than remodeling, mm-hmm, where you have to tie into existing things.
Right.
So I'm actually looking forward to learning quite a lot from this process. And I'm also doing the finishes for the new kitchen. So I'm building a kitchen.
Okay, oh, then.
Okay.
Which I said I would never do, but here we are.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
That sounds gosh. Awesome. Yeah.
That's watch this cabinets. Journey. Yeah.
It'll be a paint grade, though, so at least it'll be a little bit easier.
Oh, you're going to get hammered for that.
I don't have to do any, like, I don't have to worry about, like, color, or grain, or, like, divots.
Same deal. Yeah.
Feeling that. Get some Bondo going on there, you know?
The internet hates paint, though. I mean, unless you go outside of the woodworking world. But
only if it's milk paint, inside though. The it has to be milk world? Paint. They allow milk paint.
Well, milk paint that's not actually milk paint, preferably.
Yeah, there we go. Acrylic obviously. Paint, in other words.
No milk.
Yeah. Man, that's great. Can't wait to see it come together.
Me too.
All right, Shannon, what about you?
I had a... I had kind of a big error this, depending on when we recorded last, since we last recorded, I did inlaid a marquetry piece into a desktop, and, you know, inlay is one of those things where like you can't really seat it fully because if you do, like you'll never get it back out. So when you're ready to glue it up, there's a little bit of a kind of a let's hope this works that goes in, you know, you measure the thickness of the inlay and you measure the depth of the recess and, you know, you check the fit and you kind of get it halfway in and you see, okay, this is going together and you have a feel, you know, as you're tapping it in, is it meeting resistance, etc. Then you put the glue on and there's always like, well, is that kind of hydraulic pressure going to keep it from seating? Well, it did. The inlay went in and it got really close, really close. And I was like, okay, well, I probably should back this out. But then I couldn't because it was in foot too far and I couldn't back it out. So I was like, all right, commit, get a bigger hammer, just get that sucker seated because it should seat. You know, the measurement of the depth of the recess and the thickness of the inlay, it should work. But it just did not go together. So then I was like, all right, well, you know, maybe we can salvage this. I'll clamp it up and let it set and everything. The problem is it is a marquetry, so it's veneer, set onto a plywood backer. And I specifically put it on the plywood backer to give it a little bit of thickness because it's actually easier to inlay something that's like 3/16 of an inch thick than something that's like a 32nd of an inch thick or 1/64 of an inch thick or something like that, which is what the veneer is. So as I was kind of, it was proud of the surface, but so little that I couldn't even really measure it. I mean, I suppose I could, but I'm getting old, guys. My eyes don't see that way. but I could just see that it was a little bit proud of the surface. But the problem was, if I tried to flush it up, am I going to essentially burn through that veneer? In other words, burn through like 3 hours of marquetry work, you know? I didn't want to chance it. And in hindsight, it probably would have been okay. So instead, what I did was pulled out the iron and the bath towel and just steamed the crap out of it, because it was all high glue. And because it was just a little bit proud of the surface, I could at least get like a chisel would catch as I pushed it up to the edge. So I'm thinking if I could maybe just start to like pry it out of there, wiggle it out of there. And if I deform the plywood base at all, you know, I can figure all that stuff out. I just need to get it out of the bench without, you know, completely, or excuse me, the desktop, without completely destroying the desktop. Well, it came out, but instead of the plywood coming out, the marquetry just peeled right off the plywood, as it should, because it's high glue. So all of the pieces came free. So I'm like, I guess this is what I'm doing now. So I went from trying to pull out the disc to suddenly, there's probably 50, 55 different pieces in the marquetry. So suddenly I've got 55 pieces and I'm quickly scrambling to like keep them in order, because it's a geometric design. It's a logo. Mm-hmm. So they're all different, but they all look kind of the same. So I'm like, crap. So now I'm like,
worst jigsaw puzzle ever.
It was awful. and you know, there's reverse sides, because the backside, you know, it's the same species of European pear wood. It looks the same on the back of the front, but if you flip the back to the front, it won't actually fit in the recess, right? Because it's been cut by hand with a fret saw. So I'm like just basically peeling off one piece at a time and like moving it over to like a piece of plywood, kind of in keeping it like in the same order, kind of like an exploded diagram of it. And I keep having to go back to the iron and adding more heat, because of course, you know, it's tacking up on me as I remove the heat. And it turned into like the worst reverse glue up ever. You know, glue ups are stressful. This is way more stressful. All these pieces pulling it apart. So then I just, you know, once I finally got it apart, and then I had this plywood disc, and sure enough, that plywood disc was slightly recessed below the bench at that point, which tells me if I just stuck to it, I probably could have planed away and still had veneer left. But mm-hmm. I still don't know. Like, that would have been the worst case scenario, like actually destroying the pattern. At least I, you know, can reassemble it now. So then it was just a matter of, you know, drilling some holes through the plywood and just like getting a screwdriver under there and just prying the thing out. You know, I could be destructive at that point. Yeah, now I've re-glued up the marquetry pattern. But the problem now is the marquetry pattern, you know, inlay, you set your inlaid piece in and you trace around it with a knife to get an exact shape. Well, is the shape going to be the same? You know, if I take this marquetry and I glue it onto another piece of plywood again, I still have to saw the plywood out into that round shape. And if the plywood is not sawn exactly the same, it's not going to match the inlay. So now I need to make the inlay slightly bigger, right? So I can trace around it. Well, the problem is the marquetry, I can't make any bigger. The plywood backing was sawn to the shape of the marquetry. So I added to this the perimeter, the diameter of the circle, I added more marquetry. I added like a decorative border around it. So nice. This pattern, I mean, in the end, I think it'll end up looking kind of cool and probably actually look intentional. But yeah, it was like one of those things where I was literally in the last stage of this project. After that would have been flushing it up and applying finish. And a week and a half later, I still have a marquetry panel like in the vacuum bag. Because here again, when you do marquetry and then do it in an inlay, you know, one of the big issues, once you do marquetry and you just glue it down to the substrate, you're good to go. But if you glue the marquetry to like a temporary substrate that's kind of thin, that thing's going to turn into a potato chip.
because of all the moisture from the glue. So I'm essentially keeping it in the vacuum press and keeping weight on it to let the moisture evaporate to keep the thing flat, because if it curls up on me, it's going to be really hard to then inlay it and trace around it. So it's just, it's turned into, it's turned into one of those great situations where it's like, you know, problem solving, and it, you know, I kind of increased my, my box of tricks, if you will, in order to make it work. But at the same time, it's just like, son of a, I just want to be done with this. I was like, I had it fit. I was so close. Yeah.
Jeez.
So yeah,
that's how it works. There.
Problem solving at its finest. Yay. But hey, hide glue is reversible.
That's why you use it, right?
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Do you want to hit this little bit of kickback we have here?
Yeah. Because it occurred to me, I read it and pulled an image out of the email he sent us, and then I deleted it from the inbox. You guys probably never even saw it, so I better read it.
Nope.
So this is from Tim, and actually Tim is the guy that asked us about financial planning, and we did the whole episode about retiring. So welcome back, Tim. This question better be as good as the last one. Anyway, so he said, I was walking through a local home goods store when I came across this cutting board on display, and I will include a picture in the show notes here. So you're going to have to go to woodtalkshow.com for once, folks. There will be an image there. So I saw this cutting board on display. I did a double take. It is a rectangular cutting board with a live edge on all four sides. Sweet. I'm pretty sure whoever designed this does not understand how trees work. There's so much wrong here. I don't know where to begin, but clearly Cremona has the slab porn industry. So clearly Cremona and the slab porn industry are to blame. So yeah, just picture a cutting board with bark on all four sides. And it's not like a cookie. It's not like an ingrain cookie. It's face grain rectangular cutting board. So yeah. Unless this is like those like rectangular watermelons the Japanese make. Maybe they're growing trees this way now. Just doesn't work.
I don't know. If you like the bark on two sides, you'll like it on four.
Be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, more stable than a cookie, so it's all good.
Yeah. No. How about no?
Just no.
Just no. Jeez. All right. Well, you guys know who else has good cookies?
Hey, that actually that works. Bench cookies at Rockland, like man.
They with do. Frosting. That's right. Well, you know what? Rockler is excited to announce the opening of a brand new store in Round Rock, Texas, which is just north of Austin.
The stars at night are big and bright. Deep in the heart of Texas.
Can't say Texas.
For a second, I didn't follow that. I actually thought that was Cremona. I was just like...
So I was like, what was going on?
It does sound a lot like Cremona, honestly. Well, you may be missing out if you haven't been to a Rockler store lately. You'll find top power tool brands and accessories, a large lumber selection, dust collection, router tables, T-Track, finishing supplies, hardware, and more. Rockler stores also host a variety of classes and events. Visit rockler.com to find a store near you, or stop by the new Round Rock store if you're in the area. No matter which store you visit, you can count on Rockler for innovative products, expert advice, and exceptional customer service. Well, thank you, Rockler, for being a sponsor of the show. We enjoy this relationship, and we hope you do too.
Now I want to go see Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I know. So good. It holds up,
and to think that, like, we were probably, when I was in Austin last time, you know, we went did the touristy thing, saw the Alamo. And I kept wanting to like go to one of the guards and asking where the basement was. And I was like, no, I don't want to be that guy. He probably gets that question
there's seven no basement times in the a day. Alamo. Yeah, you know, he's heard that before. And it's no longer funny. No,
definitely not.
Well, cool. All right. So we got some questions to answer from you guys. We get those from our email, sometimes elsewhere, but mostly from the email. This one is from Chad. He says, early on in my woodworking journey, I use Minwax stain from a big box store because it was easy to find, pretty easy to work with. I've always wondered what the yellow can of Minwax stain means when it says penetrates, stains, and seals. It's the seals part that I'm wondering about. Do you guys know if there's something in this simple stain that we've all probably used that seals the wood? If so, what are the advantages and disadvantages of this feature? I try not to stain most of my projects, but when I do, I am usually using Mohawk products, which I like better. Love the show. Keep it going. So that, you know, you got to be careful when you look at labeling on
marketing
finishing supplies, right? The marketing attached to this stuff, especially when you see things like penetrate. Well, What does that mean? Like, yeah, it absorbs into the wood. Penetrate makes it sound like it's actively being driven down into the fibers. So it's, you know, it's deep. But ultimately this is, it's a lot of fluff. Nice and deep. That's how we like it.
Penetration.
So obviously penetrates, you know, that just means that it's going onto the surface and not just staying on the surface. It's going into the wood fibers. Stains, that's obvious. It's bringing some color to the party. The seals aspect is where they're getting, you know, they're kind of stretching a little bit. Most of their finishes have a boiled linseed oil.
A lot of it. Because yeah. I hear that seal thing all the time. I mean, people think now it's like impervious. Like, oh, now it won't move.
It's a sealer.
I've sealed it. So the water won't get in. Yeah, well, and it won't move anymore. I hear that all the time.
Well, especially in the case of a stain. If it was truly sealed, then why are you recommending I put a top coat on it?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so when they're saying sealed, that just means that there's oil in that can. It could be boiled linseed oil or whatever other type of oils there are, soya or something like that. So that oil does have a curing process. And what can happen is if you put a coat of stain, if you ever tried this on scrap or maybe accidentally on a project, you've stained it once and you go back and put a second coat on and maybe you're a little too liberal that second time, it won't absorb as much because effectively you have oiled the surface and that oil did cure to some extent and partially sealed the surface. So that's what they're saying when they're saying sealed. Think of it like if you took a can of boiled linseed oil and you soak that into the surface the next day, is it totally sealed? Is it totally impervious to anything being absorbed? Not really, but it is starting down that path. So that's typically what they're referring to with sealing. But it is not necessarily adequate and you're going to want to put something on top of that. So, I mean, technically it's not like they're lying. There is some sealing going on. It's just not the way that woodworkers would think of it. To truly seal a surface requires other materials or multiple coats of, you know, some kind of,
don't they put a little bit of varnish in there as well?
I don't think they do.
It's an oil based.
I mean, varnish, there might be some companies that do, or who knows, maybe there's some specialty product. Maybe that's their poly shades. Product is something that definitely contains, you know, poly, but typically it's just going to be a mixture of an oil, a thinner, and then, you know, pigments and dyes.
Pigment.
So, as far as I'm aware, and keep in mind, a lot of this is, you know, proprietary stuff. So what's actually in there is not always obvious to us or disclosed to us. Okay. That's it. Shannon.
Interesting. Let's see. This is from John. He says, many of us rarely use screws in our shops outside of general purpose and cabinetry. I recently needed 7 number 6 screws, 3/4 inches in length. The big box store only sells them in packs of 10. This is like the hot dog and hot dog bun thing, right? What do you do with the extra 3 screws? Do you put them in a well-organized cabinet / container? Do you put them in a jar with every other piece of random hardware you've acquired over the years, never to be found when you need it? Or do you throw them away knowing you'll never see them again? And if you need more, you can go to the store and buy them.
I shoot them with flaming arrows. Is what I do.
Right.
I know what I should be doing with them.
I don't know. This actually might be a question to I'd love to hear from you guys as well. But I started with option number 1, like the proverbial coffee can of hardware. And yeah, we all know what happened. The coffee can of hardware just continued to get full to the point where I'd never be able to find anything. Or it'd be like, oh, I know I have one of those in there. And you like dump it onto the bench top and there's, you know, 1,000 pieces. As it got fuller and fuller and fuller, I stopped doing that because it was just too much to sort through. So then I bought one of those little cabinets with all the little drawers in it, like the plastic screw cabinet or whatever. And I would specifically buy 2 packs, you know, so you get the 10 screws. Well, now I have 20. So now I can put them in the little drawer and it became like I would have screws on hand so that I was never going to the store and buying screws. So, and that kind of sort of stands today. That little cabinet used to be a little better organized. Now I have a bunch of little drawers that are like the coffee cans.
It's 100 coffee
but
cans.
But at least they're
now.
Small coffee cans and they're easier to sort through. But the upshot to that is I can't remember the last time I went to the store to buy screws. Like, I just dig through what I have. And if I don't have something that doesn't work, I find another way. Or usually I find a screw that if it's not exactly what I'm looking for, this one will work, you know, and maybe the screws on that piece don't exactly match. And that's fine because I don't care. So yeah.
Sure.
That's what I do.
I usually put them on the counter and I go, I'm going to put those away. And a couple of weeks go by and I see them there again. And I'm like, what the hell's the deal with these random three screws? These need to go in the garbage. And I throw them away. I've got a hardware organizer similar to what you have, Shannon, with all the drawers in it. And I do, if it's substantial stuff, I do try to hold on to it. But my problem is every time I need a certain screw, I go through, I look through, I'll get through like maybe 15 drawers. I get frustrated. And I'm like, screw it. Home Depot is 5 minutes away. And I go get what I need, only to probably come back and find it the next day. Like, oh, okay. I did have these 3-inch lag screws. I probably should have looked harder. But yeah, hardware, because of the infrequency, and it's kind of like you need it when you need it. And it's not something that's worth taking up a bunch of space to store. I find that things like screws are a difficult thing to justify getting really good and well organized mm-hmm. with, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Well, I think I've also just over the years, I use the same hardware. You know, I rarely have that much need for screws, like you said. So when I do, it's kind of the same ones over and over again. So going and buying like two and three packs of them and having like a larger supply on demand has just ended up working well. You know, it's mm-hmm. rare that I'm like, oh, I have to have this specific screw. Like, you know, that's usually like a piece of hardware dictating, you know, this particular screw to go with it. And if that's the case, it came with that screw, you know, so I'm good to go. Like if you buy, you know, good quality hinges and things like that, the good companies send you the screws, you know, and the really good companies send you
the great companies
send you a steel screw with the brass screws. Yeah. So you go and drill the hole, you know, they give you the little sacrificial screw, if you will. I don't find myself starting from scratch thinking, okay, now I'm going to need six screws. And if I do, you know, the stash of 1-inch or 1 1/4-inch number 8 screws that I have is just fine. Works well. Yeah.
I think I know Matt's answer because I know we talked about this hardware in the past. And his was just like, F it, I'm going to the store every time I need hardware.
To a certain extent, that's true.
Yeah.
I have the like the sort bin things with like the little cups or whatever. They're like in a tray and you close it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I have things kind of sorted by like size or like number 6, number 8, if it's nuts and bolts, 1/4-inch or 5/16 or whatever. And I tend to like kind of like put stuff back in there if I have extra from something, but to like, I don't know, you guys' points, like I only really use like a few different sizes of things. Mm-hmm. In most of my work anyway. So it's not like I need to have all these things.
Right.
And for like the times where I have stuff kind of laying around and I don't really feel like putting them back in the bins. Like I have a bowl that's over there that I put like all my extra hardware bits and pieces into. So it's kind of like the reshelf section of the library. The
reshelf.
Like don't bother putting it away.
Nice.
And then like eventually like, oh, this bowl's kind of full. Let me just pick out the things that are like somewhat valuable and easy to put away. And then the rest of it is dump in the recycling and then move on with my life.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, it becomes a job at a certain point. And I think if you, I don't know, maybe a general maker might have a different perspective. I'd like to talk to people who are into a bunch of different disciplines. They find it useful to just carry all this hardware on hand.
Yeah. Cause I think other things like that, they're actually using screws and fasteners.
Yeah, it just comes up.
We're over here making joinery, and they're over there screwing crap together.
Well, and I also think anytime you have, like you're dealing with bolts, so in other words, you have to have a threaded female part of the connection, I think you tend to hang on to that. Because like for instance, my bicycle maintenance stuff, I keep everything. Like if I swap out a derailleur, or if I swap out, you know, even a bottle cage, I keep all of the bolts, all the stuff, because you know there's Allen bolts and Torx bolts and all this different stuff, and you in that instance I do kind of throw it in a box. You know, I do have the proverbial coffee can over there, but like that hardware, it's super specialized, but it also, like, it's not a matter of if you get a screw, if it's a wood screw, you can drive it into the wood anywhere, right? It doesn't really matter. It's just a matter of the pilot hole changing. Well, in the instance of more like machinist type stuff, well, it has to, the pitch of that has to specifically match this thread. And in this case, it's got to be a Torx screw because it's going into carbon, yeah. You know,
it's got to be.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So I do keep every left bit of that. I think, yeah, I think Matt's point is right. If the screw doesn't work, I'll just cut a tenon. Ha ha.
Right. Yeah. I think cabinet screws or like wood screws, you know, standard stuff. If I'm doing cabinetry or whatever, and just happens to need a screw, that's one thing I do like to have around pan head screws as well, but it's all woodworking related. I want a nice little selection of those for whenever I happen to need them. But once you get outside of that, it's a lot more, I just don't care as much about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting question. Thought invoking.
Yes, it is. Right.
You're up, Matt.
Why did I pick a long question?
Yeah, summarize it.
Yeah, that takes more work. This is from Nathan. He says, hey guys, this question is mainly for Matt, although it applies to anyone who's made a thing and put it on the internet.
I've done that.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, Shannon, have you done that?
I don't think so. I don't know.
You don't get
to answer this one, though.
He stopped.
We're not going to seek your advice on this. Anyway, Nathan recently built a walnut crib as a gift for friends having their first child. Though I made some minor changes, it's pretty darn similar to the crib Matt built for his own kids. I didn't put much thought into the ethics and legality of following along with a YouTube video to make a project to be given away. Now someone else has seen the crib and wants to commission me to make another. Although I know the Cremona crib didn't reinvent the wheel, it's still a piece of furniture that I didn't design, and I stand to make money on it if I take the job. I'm a hobbyist, but as my skill improves, I'd like to at least be open to making some money on the side. Can you give me any general guidelines on intellectual property when it comes to furniture design? Aside from the obvious legal questions, I also like to not be a jerk and take money or credit for something I didn't design. Love the show, and as always, thanks for not quitting or knitting. Yay!
Okay.
That's a good question. And I think we have talked about this at some point, but
good luck finding it.
It's a good recurring theme of like, okay, well, what do I do here? I'm trying to make someone else's design and end up selling it. And I think the sort of like easy cop out answer is just to ask. You kind of see what that person who actually designed it says. There's mm-hmm. nothing necessarily illegal about copying someone's design like that. But it is, you know, shady. It could be shady or seen by someone as being a little more on the not on the up and up side of things.
Yeah.
I think like the general like overarching theme is like if it's a design from someone who manufactures that and sells that and that's how they make their living, that's probably gonna be a little more on the, you know, not cool side than some random guy in his garage making something and putting it on YouTube. So in the case of my designs, you can do whatever the hell you want with my stuff. You don't have to give me credit. I don't really care. The only other thing here is with the crib stuff. I mean, it's a little different world because there's a little more like
babies.
Liability issues surrounding that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why I don't sell plans for that. So I've had this question before on the bassinet because a lot of people make that. And it was a similar thing. They had made one and then their friend wanted to buy one and they asked me if they could make it and sell it. I'm like, I don't really care, but just keep in mind that I don't make any claims that this has any safety standards or it has not been independently laboratory tested or anything. It's just the design. That's up to you to kind of figure out because there's a lot more that goes into this stuff. If you start selling these things, talk to your insurance agent. And have fun with that conversation.
I was going to say, then you'll come back going, well, guess I'm not doing this woodworking thing.
Yeah, you're saying, yeah, no. Yeah, no. Because they're going to want you to have that certification that it was independently lab tested to comply with all of the consumer safety product testing stuff. So
you're going to build one
and they're going to destroy it for you in a lab.
Well, I tried to, like, I looked at the whole crib thing and when Mateo was born, I was like, that's my biggest concern. Like my pride to build something like that is not stronger than my fear for like what considerations I should have to make, you know, the perfect spacing and just everything just right. So I'm like, let's just buy something. It's a temporary period of time. He's going to use this for a very short amount of time. Let's buy something. Then at least we know it's safe. And even with that, the way that this bench or the bench, this benches are on my mind, the way this crib was designed, it kind of had the slats flaring out a little bit at the top. And in the middle of the night, I hear screaming, and I probably have told this story on the show before, yeah, but his arm got stuck in it because he could get the arm through at the top, and then he sat down. Yeah. And now his arm was wedged at the bottom of the slats. And I'm like, so even with all of this like BS government intervention and making sure that this thing is quote unquote safe, my son still found a way to get his arm locked into this crib to the point that I had to actually break the slats to get his arm released. And I'm like, well, granted, like, I guess mine could have also had flaws like that, but I'm like, I should have just built it myself. It probably would have been better. But it still just reminds you that even with all of that stuff, it's still sketchy. And you, that's where the liability thing that you're talking about comes in. You don't necessarily want people building your stuff and then giving it to people's children.
And the thing
children.
Is those standards can change over time too. And you have to keep updated with what's going on with those new regulations. Yeah. So, I mean, you can go out there. The regulations are public. I mean, it's like every other government regulation thing. The document is there. You can read through it. It's very vague. And it's not going to have any specifics in there. But if you understand how to read, comprehend, and apply those kind of standards, which is what I did at my old job, it wasn't particularly difficult, but it's definitely an acquired skill of being like, okay, how do I interpret this? Because it's all up for interpretation.
And how the judge interprets it when there's actually a case brought against you.
Yeah, I don't know how that works exactly, but yes. So anyway...
Well, this is kind of a sideline conversation.
If you have a problem with your crib, it would destroy you. And you better have a good policy in place and a good attorney to defend you.
If you want to get deeper into this stuff, there's I always reference this article from Fine Woodworking, Is Copying Furniture Legal? Let me read the conclusion. It's a decent article, but you should read the whole thing. In summary, while an initial reaction may be that furniture designs must be well protected from imitation by intellectual property, in fact, the scope of protection is quite limited and may not be available at all for many designs. In other words, like, you don't have to worry about it too much if you're just copying Matt's stuff. But you copy, like, let's say a furniture store. Well, they've got bigger, you know, resources that if they wanted to make your life miserable, whether they win or not is like, isn't really the question. It's like, do you want to go through a court battle? But you're unlikely with an individual maker, you're unlikely to confront a situation where you get yourself in trouble because these things are difficult to protect.
I think it's probably very similar to like the fashion industry where there's not really any intellectual property applied to fashion designs, but the way they get around that is having their logo
right
on the design. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's actually a really good point because you think about tiny little change you could make to a shirt or a dress or whatever and make it different. The same thing that applies to furniture. You know, we talk about inspired by, you know, I'm building this crib inspired by Matt's. But, you know, Matt used 17 slats and I have 21 slats because I like to slightly
your space thinner. Is probably too tight then.
Yeah, too tight for you sure. You know, the kid can't even see out of it.
Yeah. Well, you know,
it's just might as well put him in a damn box.
That's kind of a bad idea. You know, but you get the point. You know, I've added a slight curve to the leg or something like that. And therefore it's now, quote, my design. I do think giving credit, you know, where the inspiration came from is a good idea. But, you can't really police that. And the perfect example when we talked about this before was the whole sculpted furniture thing. You know, Mark, you were building the sculpted rocker and you were working with Charles Brock at that point. And it's like, well, how is this different from the Maloof chair? And Charles is like, well, here's what I changed and here's what I changed. And he had like a bullet point, you know, list of things that were different. But from the outward view,
he was prepared.
You know, to the person who didn't build it, who knows that angle is different, you look at it and go, oh, it's a Maloof chair. So,
Well, when one of the things that's interesting about that, and this, I guess, goes back to the label, like, and the brand being associated with it, I heard through the grapevine, and I can't say that this is 100% true, this is just what I heard, that one of the reasons that Brock had to change from Maloof-inspired to sculptured rocker, if you look at how he labels and titles this stuff, is because he was actually asked, you know, probably with a letter, asked to stop using Maloof's name. Yeah. So when you think as a woodworker, you're doing the right thing by saying, oh, no, this is a Maloof-inspired rocker. It's like, well, they don't want you to use Maloof's name at all. So you're trying to give credit and to maybe make yourself feel better about it. But meanwhile, they're like, no, get his name off of there. So you have to go with a generic name. And then you have the other side of it where it's like, so let's say a customer is looking at this going, can you believe this guy? He's doing a sculpted rocker and not once gives any credit to Maloof for this design. And, it's a catch 22 because he's like, well, I would love to give credit, but I'm not allowed to.
Which so, brings us back to the original conclusion. Just don't build anything. Just take up knitting.
Find another hobby. Yeah, it could be messy.
I'm sure there's the same similar thing in knitting.
No, I'm sure there is.
Copying patterns or something.
Let's ask Margaret. She could let us know.
And they have sharp knitting needles they can stab you with.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I won't get in trouble with my spag bow that I'm building right now.
Good luck.
Okay, well, I think that does it for us. Remember that we're proudly sponsored by Rockler. Family-owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high-quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler is everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com for a store near you or use the code WOODTALK online to receive... No, okay, that's confusing because that used to be the name of the show. Got to find a better way to read that. Use the code WOODTALK. I'm trying to avoid saying the one word thing and it totally screwed me up. You guys know what to do. The code is WOODTALK. And you'll receive free shipping on most orders over $39. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win that Clampett Deluxe kit.
Yay. Mm-hmm. I'm still back on spagbo and thinking, you know, with some garlic bread would be good.
A little bit of spagbo.
Then again, The city of Bologna might have a suit against you. How dare you use your spagbo. Anyway, please send us questions, folks. It allows us to put together shows with very little effort on our part. We just go to an inbox, select, copy and paste in the show notes, and it makes things so much easier. And hey, you get your question answered. So it's a win-win all around with a side of spagbo. So please go to woodtalkshow.com. You can submit your questions there. You can go to Instagram. You can find us at woodtalkshow on Instagram. Submit your questions. Margaret curates them all, eliminates the really, really bad ones, and sends them to us in our inbox, which is nice. Or you can record a voicemail and you can email that voicemail to woodtalkshow@gmail.com. Thank you for your questions.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye to you.